Oh, good. Thank you. Mike just told us that we have Don Erickson coming in a minute. He's getting set. What I was going to say is one of the things that you can do to protect your Linux box is get what is called an uninterruptible power supply. These things can be purchased at places like Best Buy or your computer store, and they are a device that allows you to run the computer long enough, if the power goes off, to shut it down. And some UPSs can be shut down by Linux operating systems. I believe Don is with us. Are you with us, Don?
I am with us.
All right, Don, good to talk to you. Don Erickson is going to talk to us about Debian, which I have a Debian system. So I'm going to be very interested in it. Do you want to start from the beginning and start for beginners and talk to us a little about Debian? What is Debian and how do they get it and why use Debian as opposed to Red Hat? And, you know, just a little Linux bashing here.
Well, I don't know. I started out with Linux in 1995, and I started with the Slackware disk that I bought in a book. I think it was Linux Unleashed. Anyway, the problem I had with Slackware was upgrading, and at some point I think I put Red Hat 4.0 or something on the machine, and just everything was in the wrong place, it seemed like to me. And so somebody suggested I try Debian, and I did, and I've basically been with Debian ever since. I've tried a few other things, but when it comes to the ease of upgrade and everything else, I actually have one machine that was my original Linux box. It's just a 486. It is still on my network as a backup name server, and it's still a 486, and it's still running, and it still has, I don't know if it's how old the hard drive is, but it's still there chugging. It's carp.zenny.net.
Wow.
So, you okay. Be nice to it if you want to hammer it. we'll see how it holds up.
We'll see how it holds up. Okay, tell us a little about that system. How big is the drive and how much memory do you have? Because there's one thing I want to talk about briefly here, and that is Debian's ability to run in a very small space. Go ahead and tell us what kind of a system that 486 machine is.
Well, I don't remember. It probably has something like 32 meg or something of RAM, and I have no idea what the hard drive is. Probably, you know, 2 or 3 meg. There's nothing really running on it to speak of, except it's, like I say, just the backup name server for the network.
Which network? Is that the one at home, or is it the one that you have working with the KCLUG, or which one is it?
It's the one at home. I don't really have it's just a network.
Now, is it actually the what would normally be the little router box?
No, it's behind a, well, it, you know, it's the carp.zenny.net is its DNS reverse, you know.
Oh, okay.
Name.
So if I went to carp.zenny.net, I'd actually find a web server there and I'd be able to get in on it.
Yeah, there is a web server there too. I don't think there's much on it. But I mean, the point is not that it's a great machine or anything. It's just that it's been chugging for a long time, and it's just an old 486 that was actually my first computer.
Well, I've got a 486, and right now it's a DOS box, but I'd certainly like to do an NFS install from Debian, and I've done that. My first Linux box was a Red Hat box originally, and we converted it over to Debian because the guy that was running Debian was around a lot more often than the guy that was running Red Hat, and I was having trouble with Red Hat. So we did an NFS install across the net. We got the two base files, and we put the two base files on, and then he said, here's how we do it, and that's been running ever since. It has not been running all that much. One of the things I want to do is get another machine up and running so I can learn how to do kernels and stuff like that, so I've got a machine up and running. So I need to get some Debian disks and do a DD so I can do a boot disk. But I need to download it from the site that has my speech software on it. Mm-hmm. But Debian is just so stable. I've got 2 4-gig drives and 32 megs of RAM in this Pentium 100. It just keeps running.
Yeah, and the upgrade path is just practically brain dead.
Yeah, you just type apt-get space upgrade or update space install and hit enter, and you just got everything you need. It goes out and gets all the packages and updates them, and you don't have to worry about it.
There's another option called dist upgrade, which supposedly is, I'm not really sure what the advantage of that is supposed to be. It's a more intelligent way of installing the files or something, the order that it gets done. But basically, yeah, I was talking to a guy today who actually runs an ISP in Blue Springs, and he runs Red Hat. And I was talking about upgrading, you know, a Debian distribution in place without ever even rebooting, which he found, you know, kind of amazing. Now, to him, an upgrade always means a different kernel, which I've been compiling my own kernels since I first got into it, because that used to be the only way you could support a different sound card or a video card or anything else.
Well, especially when you're still using ISA stuff, you got to compile all that ISA stuff with your kernel. You just it's not USB supported. It's not, you know, none of that. So you still have to compile all that in there.
Another reason why I prefer to compile my own kernels is, to me, I want the IP tables modules actually in the kernel. So if it comes up, if there's some mismatch and something, if the thing goes down in the middle of the night and
it'll log
reboots.
It.
Yeah, I would rather have, when the thing is up, I want to have, you know, its firewall rules with it as it comes up. So that's another reason. You know, if I have to come up with a reason to justify compiling your own kernels. And obviously, if you do it, you know, on a fairly regular basis, it's not difficult. I mean, there isn't really a learning curve on it so much, even though obviously there are differences in compiling the 2.6 from the 2.4s.
Well, 2.6 ought to be quite a little bit smoother.
Actually, it is smoother. I think it's just one command rather than the
you don't have to do
screen.
The make and the make dep and the, you know, you don't have to do all of that.
Make modules, make menu, make config,
and you don't have to do all of that nowadays, do you?
Well, you still have to do the make config on the 2.6. I'm confident of that. I actually have my personal box runs at 2.6, but one of my main servers is running the 2.429. And there is a security hole prior to 2.4.29 that allows local users to update their privileges to be root.
Oops.
And so I think they discovered that in January. So, you know, anybody who's feeling real safe, well, I trust all my users, that's fine. But there was also an AWS stats, I'm not really sure how you pronounce that, all stats.
Yeah, all hole, stats, uh-huh.
That you could run, as the Apache user, you could run any command you wanted.
Well,
and so you put
yeah.
those two together, and that can root your box.
Well, can you take, can you do a service stop command on Apache and close that hole?
Well, yeah, stopping Apache would do it, or stopping AWSTATS, or just pull it, or pulling that particular, either upgrading AWSTATS or taking the AWSTATS.pl binary out of your CGI bin would also close that. But if anybody wants to get, anybody who's running a server that is actually exposed to the internet, if you run a grep through your logs and look at people trying to get into your AWSTATS.pl binary, you will probably find some very interesting things, because this is an exploit that is out there and people are using it.
Oh, so we're starting to get the legal viruses, as it were, the hackers are getting in. I had one get into a Red Hat box, and that was the other reason I went to Debian, was that somebody got into my Red Hat box, and so we just got the two base files down and did an NFS install, and that's probably what I'll end up doing on some of my other machines once I get them to boot. Just do an NFS install from the Debian box that I've already got. I should be able to do that one box to the other, I hope.
I would think so. I mean, you can just get a netinst, netinst disk for Debian. I don't know, it's a small file, maybe 200, 300K.
Uh-huh.
Burn it to a CD and just boot off of that.
Or just boot off a floppy.
And I'd like to point out that, well, yeah, off a floppy would be fine, but if you just have it burned on the CD, everything would be on there that you need to do a net across the net install. And Debian isn't any more secure than Red Hat.
No, there sure aren't.
These are utilities that, and kernels obviously, that are cross-platform. There's no holes that I'm discussing that are unique to Red Hat or to Debian or to anybody. It's just, and of course they're patched now, but you need to keep everything updated, you know, with the security advisories. That's something that really, as Linux gets more and more popular, that's something that is, you really have to, I would advise everyone to pay special attention to that.
With me is Don Harris, and we're talking about Debian operating systems. My name is Craig Martin. The engineer is Mike Moore. We're broadcasting from the Kansas City Linux Users Group in Kansas City at the main library downtown. Don, the other thing that I find real nice about Debian, there are lots of nice mail packages on it. And there's one, I can remember the individual commands, but I can't remember what the name of the whole package is. There's like send and reply, and there's, what is the other? Incorporate, INC.
Is this like on a GUI type of mail client?
No, this is command line.
Command line.
This is command line.
And you just, well, MUT is, I usually use Pine myself. Everybody that hears that makes fun of me, so, you know, I guess I don't like to admit it except for every email that I send has that on
Pine.
It. So.
I wish I could use Pine with Emacs.
I've not ever gotten a grasp of Emacs.
I'm one of the
VI guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Emacs just seems like it's too, I don't know, VI will do what I want it to do, so and it's hard enough to learn VI, quite frankly. I think Emacs, what am I a grasp of it at the time when you make these critical life decisions, like if you're Emacs or VI? Emacs just seemed a little too involved. And VI seemed easier. Now, that's probably just, you know, my ignorance on it, but what is it about Emacs that you find is...
Well, I find that I like a lot of the... When it comes up, it's ready to type in. It just it makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know. I think that's what happens with people that run VI. It just makes a lot of sense to people that run VI. The way the mind works, I think
so. And maybe, you know, is it your mind that is compatible to it, or actually get into your mind and then force rewire your brain to where you think that way?
No, I tried VI, and I just couldn't hack VI, and it was just me. I know it was me, because a friend of mine used Red Hat, and he used VI all the time and thought nothing of it.
Yeah, well, to me, I don't know. Emacs is like Control C, Control X, or, you know, too many control. I don't know. I just never got into it. I never understood it at all.
Well,
but I know people that use it, they do wonderful things with it, and I'm sure they're much better at it, you know, than I would be, even if I had done Emacs.
Well, I think the reason I gave Pine up was because I didn't like Pico.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted something that was a little bit more powerful than Pico, and I didn't realize how to use the config file in Pine. I could ever get Pine again, I would use Pine as opposed to what I'm using now, because you've got to do all these steps.
Well, the interesting thing about using Pine on Debian is, of course, you have to compile it yourself or else get somebody else's pre-compiled package, because the University of Washington does not allow the binary distribution of Pine, even though everyone else does except Debian, since they don't have a team of lawyers on staff, doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So that, as a Debian user, Pine does get a little more problematic.
Okay, so I'd be better off staying with what I got, maybe.
I'm thinking that somebody has written like a Pine work-alike that is GPL'd, but I don't know. It's kind of like, I think, AE or Anthony's editor or something is sort of a Pico work-alike. There's something out there. That may not be which one it is.
I just didn't care for Pico, so I gave Pine up.
Yeah.
And had I looked at the config file a little better, I probably would have been able to just specify Emacs as the editor, and it would have been fine.
Yes, you can do that.
And, of course, that was before I knew as much about Linux as I did.
Well, you know, we all know more than we used to, and we all know less than we're going to learn. So, you know, we're all somewhere in the middle.
Well, what about what other things about Debian do you really like, Don?
I like their approach to how they do things. Okay, and so right now this just in. Mike has just shown me that his pictures are being uploaded to the internet, so I guess those might be available. I didn't get all that information. I'm sorry. What was I saying?
We were just talking about we just finished about mailers, and then I asked you about what other types of what are the reasons you give for liking Debian.
Basically, I think their philosophy of, you know, you don't ever have to worry about, you know, upgrading the whole thing at once. You upgrade the little pieces as you need them. It's more of a structure of, to me, the beauty of Unix in general is the fact that you've got all these great building blocks and tools laying around. And these were not written by people who were trying to sell software, usually. They were written by people who are trying to get something done. So, I mean, my philosophy has been, hey, if you want to buy software, then you can, the way to do it is to buy Mac software or buy Windows software.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you're buying software from people who are selling software. But if you want to get something done, get Unix. So, and I think Debian is sort of the epitome of that philosophy.
Well, I sure enjoy Debian on the old box, and if I get a couple of boxes up, I may be calling you and saying, how do I do an NFS install from one machine to the next so I can get it up and running?
Okay, and so you're talking about doing an NFS install where you actually want to, like, take the entire kernel and running and everything in the environment and put it on another machine?
Correct.
Let me recommend a utility called Mondo Archive.
Uh-huh.
You can basically, on a DVD, depending obviously on the size of your system, you can run it and get a bootable disk that is a image of that system at the time that obviously the disk was made. And then you can take that and do a bare metal install on similar or disparate hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy named Hugo Rabson wrote it.
Uh-huh.
He was actually in Nashville, I think, when he started working on it. Now he's back in England. But it's a really incredible tool. I mean, the options are, it'll let you do, you know, whatever you want to do as far as backing up. I actually was running it just as a kind of a last gasp backup tool, and I never really tested it. I had other backup things that I, you know, put all my faith in. This was just kind of a lark.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when I did have a hardware failure and a system crash, and you know, when hard drives and everything else gone, I think it was a lightning thing, but I'm not absolutely certain. But the point is, everything else failed except for these Mondo rescue disks that I had burned. And I was able to do a bare metal install with them. And I sent him some money.
I think that's a good idea. Well, let me just tell you what I do with my Debian system. You'll find this interesting. We use a thing called SpeakUp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, SpeakUp is a program that is compiled into the kernel. And it, when it starts, we have hardware either in the box or connected to the box that actually talks. And then we're able to use the computer based on this SpeakUp thing. So mm-hmm. To get a chance, you can go to linux-speakup.org, and they got Debian disks that have been compiled or put together with this thing called SpeakUp on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we do is we make a boot disk, a floppy, with a DD or whatever it is that you use on a Linux box. And I forgot what we used on the old DOS boxes to do that.
Probably a
rawwrite.exe
utility.
Yep, that's it. Well, in Linux, we use a DD.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know how to do that. But and then we'd make the boot disks, and then we would tell the system what kind of hardware to look for. And once we did that, the system would give us the ability to install Debian, Red Hat, Slackware were the three main distributions on the SpeakUp site, and I really enjoy Debian.
Yeah, it's to me, it's. I'm not looking for anything else. It just does everything I need it to do, and you know, I have machines that I don't even put GUIs on, and I'm sure you can do that in other distributions as well.
Sure,
but. You know, for remote administration, the command line you know, it's just the way to go. I don't see any reason to do anything else.
Well, with SpeakUp, we use the command line. I should bring a box, but the trouble is to get here with all of the equipment would be a major hassle. But I should bring my box and kind of demonstrate it and at least give the guys and gals here a chance to see how I use a Linux box. Maybe they'd find that interesting. I'll have to talk to Mike about that or somebody who's got a car. On my spring vacation, which is coming up later this month. Of course, now that's not going to help Mike's cause. It's not on any of the Linux meetings, but during the summer I have time off, and first Wednesday maybe in July or something, I should bring the box in and kind of give a demo of it.
I'm sure that would be fascinating.
Well, something we might be able to do, but I've got some Red Hat CDs at home, and I may just go ahead and install that. And then get the base files for Debian over there and get them going. I've got DSL. I'm not sure DSL likes to install Debian. Probably doesn't hurt. Used to do it with a cable system all the time, but I've got DSL now.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there should be any difference.
Okay.
You know, basically at the box level, It's still just an Ethernet card, right?
Yep, sure is. That's all.
Well, yeah, it's just whether it's a DSL modem or a cable modem, I can't imagine, speaking of someone who doesn't know, I can't imagine where the difference would be.
Well, appreciate that. And like I say, I enjoy Debian. It's just a great package with a lot of command line options. And the thing I like about Debian is, you can tell it not to install the GUIs, and you can tell it to do the command line. And you can, you know, a 2-gig drive and 32 megs of RAM and a 486, and you're on.
Well, I set up actually a box for remote, a remote box that, you know, not too long ago, maybe a month ago, and I used a Debian Sarge install and was able to actually boot on RAID.
You know, ooh, that's
the,
nice.
The root partition was a RAID partition on it, and that was something that I could not do a few years ago. I think Red Hat, you could have done it at that time, but, you know, it was everybody, the big knock against Debian all these years has been that it's too hard to install, and really the Sarge Debian network install, I'm sure it was a network install that I did with it, was, you know, just practically, you know, I don't know how it could have been any easier.
Well, when we did the NFS install on my Debian box over the net, we got the base files and I put them on there, and we did all of that, and it was actually faster than doing it from a CD in the sense that, you know, we just sent it down over the net, and then it went right to the hard drives. And even though it was coming down over the net, that was still faster than using a CD.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, and I love the update of Debian. It's just so nice.
Well, obviously that's, you know, the security is another big plus on it in my book. You know, subscribe to Debian Security, and every time that they have a patched package, you know, that there has been some security hole, and some of the security holes are pretty obscure that don't, you know, they don't really make much difference. And other ones are pretty huge, kind of like this AllStats, and if you have that in combination with one of the 2.4.27 or 2.8 or 2.6.10, I think, and earlier. I'm not absolutely certain about that. You know, that's a huge one. And, but anyhow, they just send you the facts that there are new packages out to fix these, and you just apt-get, you know, install AllStats, and, you know, you're patched.
Well, and that's just what I love about it. Now, Red Hat has gone to an apt-get system.
They have. Well, it was good enough that they should have a long time ago.
Well, they have. They've gone to an apt-get install system, so that's good. I'm glad they're kind of plagiarizing a little bit.
Well, you know, that's what, you know, open source is. That's not plagiarism under open source.
Well, I'm being a little facetious, maybe, so. Nice that they can do that. I'd like to see other versions, because I would like to see the day when Linux becomes the predominant system in the world. Windows, you know, I can sit at work and the Windows machines just sitting there will hang up for no apparent reason. Just hang up. And I've never seen a Linux box do that. They just, as the old Timex commercial John Cameron Swayze would say, they just keep a licking and keep on ticking.
Well, I have seen Linux boxes freeze up for no apparent reason. Now,
really?
We understand that apparent, you know, I'm sure there was a reason, and I'm sure there was a reason why the Windows boxes
well, yeah,
froze up too, just because I didn't know what it was. It wasn't apparent to me.
Uh-huh.
But I have, for example, have tried to look at binary files using less sometimes, and if you get you know, a big enough file with no end of line, that can pretty much seize your box for a while. I try not to do that.
Do you do C programming?
I'm sorry?
Do you do C programming?
No, I don't. I do a little bit of Perl, you know, a little bit of PHP.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I'm doing a little bit of trying to get into C++ because there's a utility that I've been using quite a bit more that I had to actually hack some of the code in. And so it's good to have some clue what you're doing.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, just walking around the dark with both hands. And
you can sure hang a box that way. It's, you can sure hang them that way. But now, PHP is pretty high privacy. Is that correct?
Well, it's interesting or not. Originally, it stood for personal homepage.
Uh-huh.
And then when that was no longer really where they were going with it, because they extended the capabilities of PHP so much, they started calling it, I think, PHP Hypertext Preprocessor, which is like a recursive acronym.
Almost like C.
Yeah, like GNU's not Unix.
Yeah.
So I guess they couldn't come up with anything better, and that's all right. It is a hypertext preprocessor. But I've never heard of the, I guess Larry Wall said that Perl was, could have been any of two or three different possible explanations or an acronym with different words. Pathetically eclectic rubbish lister.
Oh, okay.
Or what was the real one? I don't even remember what it was at this point. But, you know, everything's an acronym now.
Yeah, it is.
And, we live in a world of acronyms.
Doublespeak.
Yes.
Yeah, doublespeak.
But it's much shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Maybe it's quadruple or centuple speak.
It sure could
be. We managed to just shorten.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time. Do you have any other suggestions, recommendations? Let's say I'm a beginner and I'm going to start using Debian. What would you suggest? They go to Debian.org and get the base files and begin working on that possibly? Or can they get Debian at their local Best Buy or Circuit City? Or where do you get Debian?
Well, I think simply by the question of, you know, the cost factor, I would go to Debian.org. I don't know. I actually have seen Debian available at Best Buy or CompUSA or something at some point in the past, but it's been a number of years. I don't know that it's normally one of those distributions that anybody spends a lot of time doing a big package on. I don't think that they really have any type of a much of a promotional arm to the organization. It's all pretty loosely knit. Certainly while they used to put out new distributions at a fairly fast clip, now things have gotten so complex that it takes them years to actually come out with a new distribution. I don't know how old Woody is now. That's their latest stable, and I think it's at least 2 or 3 years old. Of course, nobody that runs Debian really, I think, just stays with the stable release. As I say, anytime you update something, like on you're pulling things out of the unstable or the testing release, I think. Well, it depends on how you have your app dev.
Well, the way I do it too is I normally have a backup kernel, which you can actually have a place where you have a backup kernel in case
mm-hmm.
the kernel that you try crashes. You can just tell the system to
go back
to
the other
kernel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely correct.
One of these times when we get with you and you want to talk about compiling kernels, one of the things we'll want to talk about is recovery from a crashed system and things like that. So I'll be writing down things. I've got something from Ed for next month. We're going to talk about permissions a little bit. And maybe next month, if you've got a little time, we'll talk about what it is. What is a kernel? We'll talk about the beginners. I know this is a fairly advanced group, but we're talking over the web here, and there are a lot of people that are beginners. So we want to talk about some of the things that are beginning things. I mean, here we are talking about Debian. What's Debian? Somebody, some ladies named Debbie, or what, you know, what do you, when you talk about Debian, what does it mean? It's a wonderful package. I enjoy it, but the beginner would not know what it is. And so this is one of the things that this webcast does a lot of. We try to cover beginning and kind of advanced things like the regular expressions that Ed was covering.
And actually, of course, Debian, Debbie was Ian Murdoch's wife's name, and his name was Ian. And so the distribution he decided to put together was called Debian.
Isn't that great? So I was right.
You were right.
All right. Well, I really like Debian all the more because I was able to decode the name. So.
Well, that's the thing with a lot of things about Linux. They may look difficult at first, but once you dig into it a little ways, and it all makes sense.
Where is a good place to get documentation on Debian? Probably Debian.org.
Probably so. It seems like their search engine server for their site seems to have been down for a month or so. So that makes it a little harder to find things.
Maybe we can do a Google or a Dogpile or one of the other servers. You could do a search on it, too. That might give you some information.
Yeah, absolutely. There are surely books out there that have been published on Debian also.
I know this, that Nakarabi has a thing called Red Hat Secrets. There's probably a Debian for Dummies somewhere. Who knows?
There might be. I also kind of have... I've always sort of had a philosophy that I didn't really want to buy a book that insulted me before I even bought it. You know, I'd rather get into it a while before I get insulted. But, you know, obviously the Dummies Servers books, the series has been very successful, and I'm sure there's a lot of good information in there for everybody at many different levels.
Well, I think that's... you're kind of like me. You kind of rather read the book. You know, give me the book. Leave me alone. Maybe the cat on my lap. He's the only one that can interfere with me when I'm doing all this. But everybody else, just let me read the book, you know?
Absolutely.
And there's plenty of stuff. If you type, Debian has a wonderful info and man page section. So any of the commands in Debian, you can certainly hit, type the word man space and the command. Question, in Debian, if I want to get a list of the commands, how do I do that, Don?
Well, you could go into like /user/bin and just do an ls, and that would give you a lot of commands as far as the standard places where most binaries that can be run are. We're talking to people who are talking about possibly installing Debian on their own box, so you know, sbin would be the system binaries.
Uh-huh.
And bin is binaries, and then there's user binaries and user sbin.
Any of those bin type directories you want to look into?
Yeah, You could actually just locate bin. Well, I'm not sure exactly how you do that with the locate, but there's so many of them that, you know, there's hundreds or thousands on most systems, not to mention the user local bins and all those.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, we'd want to get with a good mentor for a while until we got familiar with using the system.
Well, everything, you know, used to be a command line situation on DOS, and really on Unix, there are a lot of little things in Bash, et cetera, that make actually using a command line a lot easier than anyone remembers it if they've been away from the command line for a number of years. There's command completion. Usually if you start to type something and hit tab, if there is something, a command that would be appropriate, it will go ahead and finish it out for you, or give you more letters if there are two or three different options, and then you can hit tab again and usually see what all options you have. And of course everybody knows the cursor up for your history. So if you type a real long command line and it's wrong, then you just hit cursor up and you bring it back and you can edit it. And so
yeah,
just change
like
the one
mm-hmm.
the one letter that you missed.
I think all versions of Linux have that, by the way.
Yes, yeah, that's a bash, which is the default shell on Linux.
Which is real, real powerful, and it's capable.
Yes, it is.
If you're going to use in Debian, for example, or Linux, for example, what would be a good way to find out about bash shell programming? Is there a way to do that?
I'm sure there is. I think man bash would be a good start.
Or info bash.
Yeah,
too.
Or info bash. I've always used the man things more than the info. It seems like every time I do info on something I can't find in man, then I have... That's one of those Emacs things, I think. I don't know.
Maybe it's because it can't find them because it's not in its repertoire, but you can find them a lot of times in man pages.
Yeah, well, the problem I have with info is when it doesn't find them, it takes me a while to figure out that it hasn't found anything. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot more information there than even if they doesn't have any information. So I know that info is the preferred way of doing documentation for a lot of programmers. And I'm sure there are good reasons for that. I just don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Don, in wrapping this kind of up, what do you have for closing this evening? And what final words would you have for beginners or advanced folks? Maybe one each. We'll start with the beginner and then give it over to advanced users.
Well, you know, I'm not really sure that I'm qualified to, you know, present a closing argument. That's the thing about Linux is you can do anything you want to learn how to do. Because the limitations are not built in, you know, to the system. The limitations...
built into the person.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
We have the limitations built into ourselves, I guess. But we can really go beyond those limitations if we care to take the time, you know, to learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I certainly, to any advanced users, I don't really feel qualified to be able... to give them any advice at all,
okay.
I'm sure that I would be on the receiving end of
the information. Well, you know, I work in education, and what I've learned in education is I've been in my field for, 10 years, maybe even longer, 15, and I still, as advanced as I am learning things all the time, so... you might keep that in mind, but for beginners, then let's talk about that. What would you say for a beginner that's getting into Debian first time? Where does he start?
Well, Debian.org, and realistically, you know, I'm not sure that for somebody who's like a Windows user and just wants to take a look at Linux without necessarily, you know, going through the whole thing of putting there's too many tools on there that aren't really going to do much for just a casual user. But there are so many utilities, you know, that are available on any distribution. You know, if you get a disk and just stick it in, just find a hard drive that isn't, you know, pull one out of the closet and you can load Linux on it that won't interfere with your Windows install at all.
Just make the system dual boot.
Right, dual boot, and you can go and, you know, play around if you think you couldn't absolutely couldn't get away from Windows because, you know, Photoshop. Try the GIMP. You know, I'm sure there are things Photoshop will do that the GIMP won't, and I'm sure there are things that GIMP will do that Photoshop won't, but really, it's pretty powerful software, and when you consider that it's free, you know, the cost-benefit ratio goes way, way up.
Well, and what about things like OpenOffice, where you've got on the GNOME and KDE
right.
UIs are very stable.
Yeah, they're getting more, you know, basically, you were talking about Linux becoming the most popular system in the world, and it will get there. I mean, it'll probably be 30 years later in America than where it is in the rest of the world because, they're not quite locked into the status quo the way that a lot of companies and people are here in America. So I think it's the odd thing is in computers I see in the future, the United States having to catch up with everyone else, which is kind of backwards.
Well, and we were the people that came up with the computers. So,
well,
you know.
A lot of the stuff, well, it's it's a different world.
Well, Don, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We're going to let you take a break and get a cold drink or whatever you want
to
do.
Well, I sure appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. My name is Craig Martin. That was Don Harrison. Don is a Debian user, and he gave us some advice about how to get into Debian if you're interested in it, and comes to the users groups every time he can. My name is Craig Martin. Our engineer this evening is Mike Morgan, and we are broadcasting from the Kansas City Public Library's downtown branch at 14 East 10th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. If you wish to join us on a regular basis, go to www.kclug.org/live.m3u if you want to join us, and that is the way you can become very attuned on these Wednesday evenings and Tuesday evenings. The group meets every first Wednesday of the month and every third Tuesday of the month here at the library. The little man and the little lady in the box tells me it is now 8:28 p.m. So, stations along the line, if you're broadcasting us on the air, it is time for identification. Let's pause 15 seconds for identification. This is the Kansas City Linux Users Group. All right, with that, we'll kind of close things down. Mike is getting ready to shut us down. So, with that, well, thank you, Mike, for helping us again do the engineering. My name is Craig Martin. We hope you've enjoyed tonight's meeting of the Kansas City Linux Users Group, and we're sorry for the technical inconveniences. Next time, we'll be much better prepared to do this in a much earlier time. So until next time, this is Craig Martin, along with all of the members of KCLUG. We want to say thanks to Chris Beer, and hopefully, Chris, if you're listening, you get well and recover, and you come back to us next meeting, which will be the 15th. This is Craig Martin, and this is the Kansas City Linux Users Group. Thank you, and good evening.